right, is this thing on? I think it is. All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Derek, and I am the owner, creator, and head silicone slinger here at Amavidi, where we make silicone toys for adults. Now then, we had Kizu and friends scheduled for tonight, but due to an emergency, they had to reschedule. I'll let everybody know when that actually gets booked, but tonight I had to bring in a guest that I've had on before, and I'm geeking out over this one. By the way, did you notice we have a Patreon? You can find patreon.com/Amavidi and you can support us. Yeah, you should go do that. What else? I put out a video yesterday. What was that one? No, I put it out 2 days ago. Talking about the best material for adult toys and kind of doing a comparison of glass, metal, and silicone. And yeah, you should go check that out. It's on the YouTube channel. It's the most recent video I posted. And then I've got another one coming out on Tuesday that's going to be safety by design and material safety for adult toys. But before we do that, I need to get my geek on and bring on Matt, also known as Shop Dad. And yeah, we'll see. Is that... There we are. Matt, how you doing?
Hey, I am doing wonderful.
Good, good. I mean, we're over here sweating like crazy. It's like a, I think the, what do they call it now? A real feel or heat index? It's like 105 here right now.
I think real feel is a kind of TPU or TPR. I'm not sure. I don't work with it.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. Although, actually, we need to talk about that at some point, because there have been some conversations about TPR, TPE being safe for external use, but not internal use. And I think that's something we might dive into on another occasion. But
I mean, how many times can you bring me on the show? Because that's my day job is injection molding, and we, you know, I don't work with those materials specifically, but that's, I'll leave it at this. One of the challenges when you say TPU, TPE, TPR is that these are not single materials. This is a whole class of materials. There are hundreds of both just wonderful, angelic, beautiful materials and awful, demon, skin burning, terrible materials. So it's not as simple as just saying, oh, TPU, it's going to give you cancer, or no, it's fine. I mean, it deserves more than we have time for sure.
Okay. Well, why don't you take just a moment and kind of remind folks of who you are, what you do, and yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so I go by the handle ShopDad, ShopDad2 on Twitter. I, for some reason, have a, I think I just hit 9,000 people that for some reason are following my dumb antics. I'm not even a shop. I'm not making beautiful toys. I am, I'm just a little goblin engineer who helps out. My original shop that I still work with a lot, that's Pleasure Forge. I think you're going to have Kristen on before too long. Mm-hmm. So we started that together, and then she made it wildly successful. And since then, I've had the chance to start Only Goblins, which is it's kind of like a how do I describe it? It's a way to raise extra spending money so I can do dumb things like start a wiki, which is just totally non-profitable whatsoever. Waste a bunch of material coming up with new ways to make molds and then just give it away because that's a crazy idea. So my background is it's engineering, medical device, and I've got about 6 years now working with toys as well.
Excellent. So yeah, you started off with Pleasure Forge, and then Kristen mm-hmm. took over that. And let's see, when do I have her booked? I think she's coming up fairly quickly, August 28th. So 3 weeks from today. But actually, the next two are going to be collectors. We got Dong Sommelier and Ishtar 137.
Well, they are both. I think I follow both of them. I'm not sure if I follow them. I definitely see them on my threads all the time.
Yeah, I mean, those collections are just insane. I mean, they've got more in their collection than I stock.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then who was it that just did the updated collection picture? Sleepy Puppy? Sleepy yeah. Pup?
Yep.
That just did the updated collection picture. And I can't go 3 days without running into their collection picture somewhere else. Just totally unrelated. I mean, I haven't seen it walking into like a Walmart yet, but it's going to happen.
Right. So you and I talked about a few things that we could talk about tonight. One of them was, I think, mold making. And yeah. I think you've got some visual aids here. I guess the first thing we want to talk about is kind of what are the styles of molds? You know, you've got block molds and you've got glove molds. What else is there?
Yeah, so I mean, really, the there's only a handful that are popular. Block mold, you just pour a whole bunch of silicone in. Your glove mold that can be supported or unsupported. So we use Pleasure Forge uses unsupported glove molds, and there's some benefits to that. Turn time very, very fast, but they don't last as long. Supported glove molds, it's the same thing as a glove mold, but it has a hard shell that goes around the mold and helps to, you know, keep its shape. They last a little bit longer, but then you have to spend the time to make that shell. Probably the most, I'm about to skip one, layered molds. So that's one that Smooth On really kind of pushes. Is this, you make one layer, you take your item, you set it down, you make your bottom layer, you let it cure, you put mold release on it, you make your top layer, and then you have a two-layer, three-layer mold. And those are incredibly popular everywhere but our industry. And the reason why we don't see them is because of seam lines. And there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with a seam line on a toy. It's some people don't like it, but there's nothing like dangerous about a seam line. They're totally fine. Just lost my place. Okay, so layered molds. Probably the most common mold that you see in the adult novelty industry is what's called a matrix mold. I'm not quite sure where the name matrix mold came from, but it's like it's almost like building a supported glove mold, but instead of making that shell by hand, you 3D print the shell and then you backfill it with silicone. Those are really popular because they use so much less material than a glove mold, or sorry, a block mold. But they're more flexible, like a glove mold. The only thing that I don't like about those is that you have to print a new shell for every single mold you have in stock. Yeah, and that's not so bad. I mean, hey, if you know how to keep a 3D printer running and it's just running 24/7, I mean, who cares if it's like takes you 4 days to get a new set of shells? Like, you know, you probably shouldn't. You just keep loading more filament on it.
Yeah, actually. I do unsupported glove molds myself. That's where I ended up. I did start off with block molds, and I just didn't like them for my designs. It was almost impossible to get them out without cutting them, and I just aesthetically have problems with seam lines, and so I was just like, I can't go that route. I had somebody contact me this week, and they were trying to figure out. They were like, my molds are losing all the definition. And
what?
Yeah. I was like, how is that possible?
What definition?
Well, it turns out, and I'll just spoil the ending because I don't know how to build up to it and tell a good story. But the end result was that their molds, they were doing glove molds and they were too thin and their molds were ballooning.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, So that is something that I have yet to fully bring Smooth On board for as being a real thing. Not just the physical ballooning that happens, but the adsorption-based ballooning. Mm. And so we've been tracking this for, I think, 4 years now, where when we make a mold, we take a weight on it. And then when we retire that mold, we take another weight on it. And what we're seeing is that the mass of the mold is actually increasing over the lifespan of that mold. And so what I think is happening is that you have these very soft silicones that have a lot of filler oil in them. And then you have your, you know, your mold making silicones that are don't have a lot of filler. And so what happens? The silicone oil is moving into the mold and causing it to swell over time. I've done a little bit of experimentation to kind of check is this a real thing? And it seems like it is. But every time I bring it up, it's like, no, that can't be real.
Yeah, my thought goes to, I mean, number one, you can test it just by, you know, the silicone that goes into the mold versus the weight of the silicone going into the mold versus the weight of the silicone coming out of the mold. You know, there's that. But also, what about mold release? I'm wondering if it's absorbing some of that mold release.
That would have been more of a problem maybe 5 years ago, back when universal mold release was like the thing. And I know there's still one or two shops who swear by universal mold release, and that's a silicone-based mold release. But the newer ones, well, it's not really new anymore, but the MAN 200, 205 that we use now, those are not silicone-based. So really, nothing should be moving from that mold release into the mold and staying. Now, there is I forget specifically which solvent it is, but it is a you got to get Kristen on for this. She's the chemistry person. It's a cyclic ring, aromatic ring solvent. I'm sorry, aromatic ring solvent. So that absolutely will go into the silicone and it will temporarily swell the silicone, but it should be flashing back off over time.
Yeah. I think acetone, silicone can absorb acetone.
Oh, yeah.
We had a couple of questions that were popping up in the chat. Let's see, what material and shore hardness did you use for block molds? When I started, I think mine were A10s.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see going much firmer than that is just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
We actually used 20T, Moldstar 20T. Mm-hmm. That's my personal favorite. So that's what I use for almost everything. And when I do have to do a block mold, I still use it. But I'll tell you, the one mold style I didn't kind of go over is it's this one. It's the hybrid mold style. And these I started out using 20T. And I've moved to using 10A because it's just too hard to pull. Even with this thinner mold, it's just that's how you give yourself a black eye.
Let's see. Okay. Oh, we got Tibbs in the chat. We got Super Awesome in the chat. We've got Pleasure Forge in the chat. We've got Warm Inside. Kristen says we never use block molds ourselves, only for forgelings. Okay.
Yep, that's true.
Oh, Tibbs says when Smooth-On says that it can't be real, I just think about how long it took for them to agree that NV causes cure inhibition.
Right. And that was, I mean, how many people did it take? I mean, that was, Tibbs was making those reports. I was making those reports. I mean, there must have been four or five other people that were in the Discord channels that were all calling in and saying, hey, this is a thing that happens. We had the same thing with when Compat 45 came out, where they said, look, Compat, it's not bad. There's no smell. We don't know what you're talking about. And it took multiple calls to Smooth-On before we finally got them to, got them. So, I mean, very specific shout out to Heather at Smooth-On. If you've ever had the chance to talk with Heather, she is a huge silicone nerd like us, amazing person, really understands the technology behind it. When I talked to Heather about Compat and I was like, hey, it's not just me. There's multiple of us that are seeing this same thing. A couple of days later, I get this email back saying, okay, so I made like a dozen molds. And I poured every material we have into it. And then I went around and made everybody smell the silicone. And I was like, see, that's what I'm talking about. That's who you want on your tech team. If you ever have to call in for Smooth-On and you get Heather, you are going to get taken care of. I promise you. She's awesome. Yeah.
George just reminded me, anything that we mention in this episode or any of the episodes, we're not sponsored in any way. So anything that we mention as far as products or anything else, it's because we use it or we have experience with it. And it's not because somebody's paying us to do whatever. Okay. So we're talking about molds and, my experience started off with block molds and then I went into glove molds And, you know, that's kind of been where I have stayed, partly out of habit, but partly out of it works.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten into those hybrid molds with the mold shells. But so where do
send me some numbers on something you want, and I'll send you a shell pattern to work from.
Oh, so where do you recommend people start?
Oh, I hate to say this, but block molds. I mean, start with a block mold. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with adult novelty is it's so easy to do it right. You almost, you almost have to try to do it wrong. You don't have to almost try to do it wrong. As long as you do everything the most basic way possible, it's super easy. And then as soon as you get this idea in your head where you're like, I could make something really cool if I just, it's that if I just, that's going to ruin your life. I mean, I was about to say in a fun way. I'm not sure it's entirely in a fun way, but it's worth it. I will say that. Like, we need people out here who are trying to do the crazy stuff. I think I just saw, I think it was Frost today, had a post that was like, I've got an idea for a totally new type of adult novelty. And like, that's what I'm talking about. That is why this industry is awesome.
Yeah. I'm with you. As far as like the first mold, make a block mold, just make it. And, you know, probably not going to screw it up. Yeah. And then, you know, I would probably lean people towards glove molds after that, once they've got a few pours and they've gotten some experience and they've figured out what they like and don't like. What do you think?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a question that I ask people quite often is, you know, is it just you or is it a team? Are you working alone? Or do you have somebody working with you? So if you have somebody working with you, if you're the artist and your buddy's the engineer, or you're the engineer and your buddy's the artist, then you know what? Dive into a matrix mold. Lots of us can help you design it. There's at least three great walkthroughs on how to do them in Blender. There's one in Maya of all things. But if you're working alone, glove mold is going to be your next jump. That's what we went into, and there's been a lot of great reasons for us to stick with them, but it takes running a bunch of glove molds, because I think right now we just passed 400 molds, so running that many glove molds your setup ends up looking weird. So if you go into our shop, it looks funny in order to be able to hang that many molds.
You know, I should, because I don't hang mine. I have transfer paper. We call it transfer paper or masking. I use it for my other businesses. And so it's basically 6.5-inch wide, masking tape, really is basically what it is. And so when I'm done with a mold, I'll just drop it on a sheet of that and fold it up and then set it on a shelf. Because it just doesn't take up that much space at that point. But I can only imagine trying to hang up that many molds.
So the secret is bun racks, lots and lots of bun racks. You know, that when you get the bun rack, you have to assemble them. So you've got these shelves that have all the little corner or the angle brackets on them. Mm-hmm. And then it comes with these tubes, and those tubes are about 18 inches wide. And you take a hacksaw and you hacksaw them from 18 inches down to whatever the width of your molds are. And then you just reassemble it, and you end up with these tall bun racks that are only 6 inches wide. You just slide your molds back into it. And so we can fit, you know, 30, 40 molds in a 6-inch wall space.
Okay. Gotcha. So what else should we talk about as far as molds go?
So, you know, one of the things I always find interesting is how people make that decision between, you know, do you use dragon skin? Do you use mold star? What's the benefits of each? Mm. You know, should you be using a brush on versus a pourable? Should you be using a thytropic silicone? Which personally, I hate thytropic silicones. I hate how it gets gooey, but that's the whole point of a thytropic silicone, is that it starts out thin and then in a very linear way it gets thicker and thicker and thicker, so you can kind of brush it on to make that nice mold.
Is that Thyvex? Is that what we're talking about there?
You know, I could be pronouncing the word wrong. Thytropic. I think it's T-H-I-T. There's an X in there somewhere. So it's the function of having less and less shear thinning as your cure progresses.
Yeah, I was trying to remember what Smooth-On calls it. I think it's called Thyvex.
Thyvex is the additive to make something more thytropic. Yeah. Yeah. It makes it thicker. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Thyvex is their thickener. And then Polytech has one. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. I interrupted you. We were talking about what else do we need to mention when it comes to molds?
And a lot of those material properties are not particularly important for me. I know, so Moldstar, one of the big deals with Moldstar is that it has a knotty tear property. So if you tear it, it doesn't tear in a straight line. It'll kind of tear in this like jagged, and that's great because that means that you can repair the mold easier. You know, a straight line, it's much harder to line it back up. But if you have lots of nice jagged texture, it's very easy to glue it back together. But I know one of the problems that nobody tells you when you're casting silicone into silicone is that acetosi silicone adhesive, the mold repair adhesive, it's also called, dragon glue might be what Bad Dragon sells it as.
Silpoxy?
Yeah, yeah. It's actually the same thing. It's a white label of Silpoxy. But what nobody tells you, I should say nobody, because I promise you that if you bring this up, Tiberius will absolutely tell you this, is that Silpoxy causes cure inhibition in platinum cure silicones. So you can use it to glue your mold back together, but now your mold's useless because it's going to cause cure inhibition where that tear was. So you don't really care about those knotty tear properties. You know, why not use a super high performance silicone like Dragon Skin or EcoFlex? Why not get that 1000% elongation to break? Mm-hmm. I want to say if you get that 1000% elongation to break, you can get about a 3-to-1 ratio on your knotted toys. You would have to be out of your mind to want to pull a toy that had a, you know, stem that was this thin and then it went up 3 times before you hit the main toy. But in theory, Dragon Skin 10 can handle that. Whereas Moldstar cannot handle that. Whether or not you physically can handle that is very questionable. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. When I've done my molds, I have always just used the same silicone that I use for my pours. And so, you know, I haven't really, at least let me rephrase that. When it comes to making toys, that's what I've always done. Now, when I have done resin molds or molds for casting resin in, I'll go off into totally different categories that have totally different properties because they're right for casting that resin.
Absolutely.
So, again, I would just tell people, you know, part of it is experimentation. And what is it? If you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough.
Oh, man. And so I think this was maybe my third year. I started to feel like I knew enough that I could kind of be like, hey, guys, like I'm going to support you and tell you how awesome you are. Like, you know, like when you first start out, like you were looking up to everybody else. Like I was there like, oh, my God, Crow's Nest and Damn Average. Like, oh, like I'm this little baby compared to them.
Yeah.
But so when I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what, I've lived a little bit. I can give some advice. I started to save all of my blown up molds. And once a year I would pull all the bags out. And I think eventually we got to this point where we dumped out like 4 trash bags of molds across the floor. And I was trying to organize it and get a picture. And the last 2 years I have not pulled it down because it's just such a daunting task. And this is me, right? I'm the person that's like, you know, come hire my services. I'm so good that you should pay me to do this for you. I'm so good that there is a daunting number of exploded molds in my attic. There's so many molds in my attic that it has gone the same way as the Christmas lights where like every year you're like, I have to do this. And then you're like next year.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's,
So that leads me to another topic we kind of mentioned earlier in the pre-show we were talking. But okay, so what are we going to do with all of these moles that are blown out and all of these flops? And, you know, right. I have my bucket of shame that's, you know, filling as we speak. But, you know, we've got all of this silicone that we have used and either isn't appropriate or doesn't meet our expectations or what have you.
Or you mixed part A with part A or part B with part B, or, you know, you mixed up a bunch of colors and then, you know, you went to get a sandwich and you forgot that you were in the middle of casting for 2 weeks. And now you probably really shouldn't use that silicone. Absolutely. Right. We have so much waste. And I say so much waste. I mean, I work in like Briel industry, like heavy industry, where we produce we produce 3 billion things a year at my day job. And so I promise you that what we freak out about and what we consider to be waste is nothing. It's nothing. But when you add all of us up together, it starts to kind of become, you know, maybe something. And silicone is hard to recycle. There's not a lot of recyclers who will do it. I know Smooth On has said that if you give them a call, they will try to help you find a recycler in your area. There are, I forget the name of it off the top of my head, but there's a company that does home recycling for like food waste and other like kind of weird waste. And they'll send you this big cardboard box and they claim that they'll help recycle silicone and they'll do anything. It's very expensive. And then are they actually recycling it? I mean, one of the problems that I've run into in our area is that our recycling system exists to create the infrastructure for later recycling. So they come around and they pick the recycling up from the bins. But the whole point of that is to maybe one day show that there's enough recycling going on that it's worth actually building the plant. Currently, when I recycle something, all that happens is it gets picked up by a second dump truck and taken to the same dump.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I'm going to argue that, you know, you call Smooth On, see if there's somebody in your area, maybe consider doing one of those mixed waste, like specialty recyclers. But I'm actually going to argue that the best way for us to reduce our waste is for us to share knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
if you don't create it in the first place, you don't have to get rid of it.
Yes. Right. So what was your flop rate when you started versus what is your flop rate now?
Mm-hmm.
If you're really concerned about putting a piece of silicone in, look, on one side, if you put silicone in the ground, it's not going to kill a bunch of fish.
Yeah.
However, it is absolutely going to stay in the ground for a very, very, very long time. Silicone is incredibly stable. So,
which is what makes it very difficult to recycle.
Yes. Yeah. And even when you do send it out for recycling, it's not like the kind of recycling. So if I send, now there's no reason to recycle. This is PLA. So you could throw this in the trash and it will break down. Now, when I say it's going to break down, I mean, you know, 300 years from now, this will be dirt, not a week from now.
Yeah.
But for like an ABS mold, if I recycle this, they literally melt this down and turn it back into plastic. Mm-hmm. For this mold, when I send this out for recycling, they're going to chop this up and they're going to crack it and process it. And they're going to get back some percentage. It's not going to be 80% of this. It's going to be like 15% of this is going to be recycled back into mostly industrial lubricants. So it's this maybe some siloxanes, but mostly silicone oil is what they're going to get back out of this. And in that note, the silicones that we use are great for recycling because they are going to get 10, 15, maybe even 20%. Back out of it, as opposed to most silicones that are just such a low oil content. I don't think they get that. Granted, I'm pulling those numbers out of thin air. I haven't looked at this in a long time, but
yeah,
it's conceptually, that's kind of how it works.
Super Awesome C in the chat says, I quote unquote recycle my silicone by chopping up failed molds and using them as filler in block molds.
Yes. And I've been seeing that. I think the first time I saw that idea was quite a long time ago, but I have been seeing that happening more and more recently. And I think it's a wonderful idea. It's a wonderful idea. Now it's challenging because how do you make sure that one of the surfaces that has been sprayed with mold release doesn't come up against your sidewall of your mold and cause a mold breach?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things you can do around that. I like to, if I'm going to do something like that, I would probably, you know, clean it with an aromatic ring solvent. And then the other thing that I like to do is whenever I have something flop, as soon as possible, as soon as I can, I want to get that back into silicone. So, if I pull something, I'm like, hey, there's no way I can use this, but I do need to make mold soon and I want to chop this up and reuse it. So I don't want to let it sit for 2 weeks. I want to take it right then and there, cut it up, and then I'm going to dump it back into some Part B. I'm going to take, 100 milliliters of Part B. So I know the amount and I'm going to go ahead and mix it all up and then put all of that in a closed container together in my freezer. And so the freezer part's obvious, right? You're going to slow down the reaction, but yeah, that mixing it with the Part B. So what you're going to do is instead of having those long chains terminate and end and go dead, because, once this silicone has finished curing, most of those ends, they're dead. You can't really do much with them. Instead, what you want them to do is to come out here and grab on to some fresh chains and kind of continue to be active and be available. And that'll help. I've had success maybe out to 3 or 4 days with that method.
Okay. Okay. Couple things. One is, when you grab something, is that just a fidget toy, or is that something you want to show us?
Oh, I've got all kinds of fun stuff laying around.
Okay.
You know what? I'll tell you about some of the stuff on my desk. So we've got, you guys have already seen me playing with this, and this is a little tiny mold shell for a hybrid mold. And so those fins there will make these fins here.
Mm-hmm.
And the exciting thing, I think the really exciting thing about this is that as soon as we are done with this meeting, I get to go into the other room and pull off the mold shells because we have finally finished the full-sized Tabaxi. So the traveling Tabaxi, and it has that name because the whole point, the entire reason for existence for this design is to be a way for me to send a mold to other shops for them to have a chance to kind of see how I do it and maybe have some like cool ideas. And maybe you'll email me and say, hey, I love what you did, but why don't you try this? And we can share knowledge, and it'd just be a fun thing to do. So the mold shells are done. I get to start making hybrid molds from this probably next week. And then maybe 2 or 3 more weeks after that, I'll be contacting a bunch of our friends and we'll get this party going. I'll probably start with all of the wonderful folks like you guys who were nice enough to contribute to the Maker Wiki, give you all first shot on playing with it.
Okay.
I think it's a little bit outside of what you guys normally do, but, yeah, for sure, if you're interested, let me know.
Okay. Bobby White asks, is this the fabled shop dad who made the seahorse models for PP Sculptors? I guess that's Paladin Pleasure.
That's what I'm holding right here. This is, so I did not make this model. Let me rack my brain for 1 second to remember the name of the wonderful artist who made this. It wasn't Nyx. Scion. It was Scion who made this model. It's a beautiful, absolutely gorgeous model. And so these, I just finished up the small. We have the medium, large, extra large. Those are all they're in the sandblast cabinet right now, and then they'll get their hard coat and finish, and they'll go out here soon. And somewhere around here, I actually have a really cool grinder for PPS as well that's about to go out.
Okay, yeah. So we kind of got distracted there for a moment.
Yeah,
ADD kicked in. So we're talking about recycling. I've had this idea of, and I don't know if this would work, but some way of kind of creating a clearinghouse where we could all just kind of like ship all of our crap to, and then at least maybe it would be interesting to somebody to recycle that.
Yeah. So that, you've run into the problem is that we have LCL, less than container load. So mm-hmm. as soon as you hit FCL, full container load, you can absolutely find people to recycle your silicone. I have, I should say Kristen has, probably about 20 5-gallon buckets now that we've saved up. So that's like an eighth of a truck. Yeah. So yeah, I think, you know, if you manage to get together, 2 dozen shops and, about $1,000 for the truck, you could absolutely do that. That'd be a great idea.
And we could do it like once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the total output of the indie industry is absurd now. I'm so excited to see how much we've all grown.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, right? Like, I mean, I think that was on the last time we were talking. Like, one of the big points is that the adult novelty sector is supposed to grow to $63 billion. That's huge. That's bigger than the entirety. So like, if you like, think about like Fortune 50 companies. So like Johnson & Johnson, huge company. The entirety of Johnson & Johnson does not make $63 billion.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like we're having an impact on the economy.
Yeah, but I tell you what, we need to branch out. We really need to branch out. We need to.
In what direction?
I don't know. I can't answer that. So we have had this like wonderful incubator of, you know, kind of like Twitter, Discord, to some extent Reddit, of like just like this little incubator of very awesome customers who just buy from us time and time again, have these huge collections. People like, I think you're saying Dong Som, that have really helped us get what we're getting. But eventually that, you know, that's still only what, some tiny percentage of the total market. So, you know, we need to get out there and be selling through brick and mortar stores, through these big online retailers. We need to be doing our same direct to customer, but reaching more customers.
I think one of the conflicts.
I'm just a simple engineer. I don't know how to do that.
I mean, I think one of the conflicts there is that we as makers want to make beautiful things. And so often those things are unique, and the retail brick and mortar stores want to sell 50 of the same thing over and over again.
Sure. And I think we can do that, and it doesn't have to kill your creativity. I mean, you already have a handful of stores that are doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and this probably comes from my kind of like engineering thought process, that I see beauty in the process, not just in the finished product. So if you can manage to figure out how to make 200 toys that are all that same beautiful seafoam green with gold highlights, you should feel the same way about that. You should be just as excited that you did that as, you know, that one off piece with the beautiful painted base, which is still sad that we don't have Kiss Win Friends on tonight, because I would have loved to hear all of their secrets about their crazy painted bases. Those things are awesome.
Yeah. Rokio is one of my wholesale clients. And, you know, you were talking about, you know, beauty in the process. And I have my process documented, and I hand it to my employees, and, you know, it takes a little while to get them up to speed, but it's so, I don't want to say regimented, but it's structured in such a way that if we want to make 200 of something, they're going to look very, very similar.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, accessibility should be a goal in and of itself. I mean, I constantly come back and I say, well, you know, Kristen's the one who made us successful. And she did that by, there's several ways that she made us successful. But one of those was making these really beautiful one-off designs. Mm-hmm. You know, every toy is different. Every toy is just gorgeous. But, you know, in that process, we're kind of missing some of the parts I think we should be proud of and we should really be selling ourselves on. I think we were talking kind of before the show, and we got talking about form versus function versus form, which one causes which one. And we should be just as proud, if not more proud, of toys where you start out by saying, here's what I'm trying to accomplish. And then you accomplish it really well. And maybe what you're trying to accomplish is having a really good wholesale product.
Yeah.
I mean, we just brought up the Seahorse that's going back to Linda at PPS. And this is this is an awesome design. I mean, it's, I'm sure that most people, they look at this and they say, well, that's really pretty. It's beautiful. It's this cute little seahorse and it's got this cute little base, but this is easy to pull. There's mm-hmm. nowhere in this design to trap air. There is enough texture to look neat without so much texture that this would be bad in use.
Yeah.
You know, we look at the bottom of it. I added bolt down holes on it. So every time she goes to make a mold with this, it's not being hot glued down every single time.
Mm-hmm.
We used 5 millimeter shell on this. It's very, very thick. So this thing will last for years. You won't be reprinting it in 2 weeks. Those are all things that we as makers should be incredibly proud of having figured out how to do.
Yeah. I should bring up a picture at some point of, I keep forgetting to bring home my box of flops. Cause I think that's one of the things that people love to see, but when it comes to, you know, thinking about design, you know, I was looking at the head on that horse. What's the word? Seahorse. That's what I was looking for. And that nose, I was going, okay, they gave us a nice curve there and a nice angle so that we're not going to trap air. Cause I was like, okay, that's a point where we're going to be trapping air bubbles and creating problems for ourselves. But I have a mold that I had to actually go back and redo the master on because I didn't think about that. And I ended up having to.
Oh, yeah.
I had my master and then made a casting of it. And then I did a casting of it in Monster Wax. And then I was able to go back and reshape it so that we didn't have any problems for production.
But, have you ever had Monster Wax? Sorry, I'm interrupting. Finish your thought.
No, I mean, that was basically it, is that, you know, I had to do it in Monster Wax in order to get something that I could reshape very easily. Because this was actually done in, original was done in Sculpey. So there mm-hmm. was no going back and
cleaning. Oh, good old Sculpey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to ask, because I need to recruit more people for their knowledge because I'm just so specialized. I've worked with Monster Wax a little bit, and something I didn't like about it was that I swear that when I reuse Monster Wax for like the third or fourth times, sometimes I'll start to get cure inhibition.
Hmm.
Have you ever seen that, or is it just me? Maybe it's just my sweaty hands. It's my terrible.
I don't know. I can't say that I have used something three or four times. I mean, that stuff lasts me forever. I went crazy when I got it. So I got I got one of each, the soft, medium, and the hard, and I got them in those 5 pound blocks. And so I've got tons of the stuff.
Had you worked with the hard, like real modeling clay before, like hard modeling clay before?
No. Uh-uh.
Cause I hadn't either. And I was like, I did not know what I was in for. I got the hard and I was like, this is a brick.
Yeah. But
like, please, the fine artists that are out there, you know, that are going to watch this someday, please tell your dong friends, warn them about how hard real artistic clay is. Like, nobody told me that you can warm it up, that you can then cool it down to like smooth it. I didn't know any of these tricks, like the alcohol smoothing trick.
Uh-huh.
No one told me any of this. I was just struggling. It was sad. It was like a sad 2 years.
Yeah, alcohol. And because it's basically a mix of clay and wax, so it kind of has mm-hmm. the properties of both. But you can also torch it. You can hit the surface with a torch and just get that kind of, I don't want to say get a glassy surface because you can't. It's not quite that, but you can at least get a nice smoother surface with mm-hmm. a bit of a torch. August has a question. Have you tried any mold making experience that you weren't sure would work out, but did? On the flip side, have you had any terrible disasters when experimenting?
Oh God, all the time. Actually, I just had a conversation with my partner where I justified every time I've been overly confident and they've been mildly annoyed with my overconfidence. I just totally justified their feelings the other day because I actually managed to just destroy a massive number of masters because I didn't follow my own directions. It was very impressive. I can't think of a good example off the top of my head of one that was, you know, I didn't think it would work and then it did. I'm normally like, oh, this is definitely going to work. And then it doesn't. I think that's normally what happens to me. But that happens all the time. I mean, one of my favorite stories when I first started working in research and development, I had this guy come up to me and we were talking and he was like, hey, you know, I just want you to know, you know, this is R&D. Only 10% of what you do is going to work. And he was warning me. I mean, the guy was like crushed. It was like at the end of his career and he was just like really kind of crushed by this whole like 90% of everything he'd ever put his heart and soul into didn't work. And he's just like, well, 10% of it is all that's ever going to work. And I'm like, you're telling me 10% of my bad ideas are going to work. That's awesome. I'm so excited. So, yeah, I know that happens all the time. I had one engineering resin that I really loved, but it was not particularly opaque, and that is Sriaya Tech Fast Smoky Black. I love it, but it's not very opaque. And then I had another resin that was a very nice opaque black, but didn't have quite the same qualities that I was looking for. And so I was like, well, you know what? Let me just mix it. Both of them run great on my machine. I'm going to mix them 50-50. I'm going to get my settings put right in the middle, and then I'm going to bust out this huge order, and then they were all bad, all of them. It was really – and, you know, it's funny because, like, I literally – like, I've wrote paragraph after paragraph that's like, you know, don't make changes. Like, once you have your system locked down, you know, just go with it. Don't make these changes. Don't follow the instructions. I literally wrote that down. Kristen's telling me not to do these things all the time. And then I'm sitting here like, I didn't follow my own instructions. Because of that, I have to start back over on a $3,500 order.
Yeah.
So.
I think for me, there was.
She's actually looking at me from across the room, being very satisfied at me admitting this.
By the way, I don't know if everyone knows. I don't know if everybody saw Fiona was hanging out for a minute there. I think the things that surprised me that worked is blending silicones.
Right.
I was really surprised when I started, because I was talking to one of my vendors and I was like, you know, my deadener has and my hardener have been erratic. You know, I can't get consistent results out of whatever deadener and hardener I was using. And they were like, well, how about you blend the silicones? I was like, there's no reason why that shouldn't work. And I started blending silicones. And then at that point, I never had to use a deadener or a hardener ever again.
And yeah, because you've been custom mixing. I think you said that on the last one. And I was like, wow, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it took me a while because, you know, I had to buy samples of all the different silicones that I wanted to end up making. I created references for myself. So I had a 0030, a 0050, an A10, an A25. And I was like, okay, these are my references. What proportion of each of these silicones do I need in order to get to this result? And, you know, I spent a fair amount of time and a fair amount of silicone trying to get there, but eventually I did. And it has made things very consistent.
You know, and having something not work doesn't mean it's not going to work. I mean, the ovipositor that I've just never actually finished and put out there is, it was an experimental test bed. This thing has so much, it's probably got four or five different bad ideas in it all at one time. And the first one that we put out was just terrible. All these great ideas. I'll show you one. So when you look at the bottom of this thing, if you've ever used an ovipositor before, trying to get the eggs in sucks. They're slipping around everywhere. When you're trying to be in the mood and you got eggs flying everywhere and not the way they're supposed to be flying everywhere. So I said, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to put this ramped edge so you can kind of, you know, in the dark, find the hole and it'll go in. And then we're going to put this these slits here to make it easier to come in. And they're actually here because this is a I don't think I can show it well, but this is actually kind of like a one-way valve. So it goes, it gets thin and then it gets thicker. And there's kind of this profile, this squared off profile. So the idea is that if you push the egg in, it doesn't pop back out.
Okay.
And so each egg advances the next one. And it was such a great idea in theory. And then we made a bunch of testers and we put it out there and people were just like, yeah, like I see what you were trying to do, but I couldn't get the egg in. It was even worse than before. It actually went the other way. Like instead of it's keeping them in, it was causing them to back up. And so, you know, we iterated the design. This is actually the third iteration of this lip and it works now.
Okay.
There's an S curve. You know, normally these things are straight.
Yeah.
This one has an S curve in it. The first one, that didn't work. It took two iterations. There's actually texture on the inside. I can't show that well. You can probably see it through the light. But in here, there's texture because it can also be used as a penetrable. But the problem is that if you have texture, it's going to stop the eggs from moving through. So you had to kind of have this directional texture. And figuring out how to do that right. I mean, that took multiple tries.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, failure's normal. It doesn't make you a failure.
Mm-hmm. Worm inside.
One oh. great.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. As I said now that I've put all this work into it, I have, let's say one. I've actually got three. I think there's three of these really awesome high-tech ovipositors. You know, just like 2.5 years of work and managed to make three of them. So, you know, good job.
Yeah. Number one, I think failure is just a data point. It's
right.
Not a reflection of who you are or anything like that. You know, you talked about, you know, 90% of what you do is going to be a failure. Worm Inside was asking, do you pre-blend as I don't see it in your live cast videos? Watch my most recent video, because if you watch it closely in the first 30 seconds, you'll see how I do it. And there's a trick to the way that I do it, and I'm going to share my tricks, but the two silicones that I use have very different properties in terms of pot life, cure time. And you know, one has a 5-minute pot life, the other one has a 20-minute pot life. So when I'm mixing them, you know, I will start with my 5-minute pot life part A. And then I will add my 20-minute pot life part A, 20-minute pot life part B, and then my 5-minute pot life part B. And by doing that, I keep my 5-minute parts from touching. And that way I don't have to worry about my silicone starting to cure too soon. I don't know. If you go back to watch the video, watch the first 30 seconds, you might see it, you might catch it, but I don't point it out.
And you're going to want to, with that kind of work, you're going to want to run a small batch experiment, because I'm not sure what you use as far as which side has the initiator and the crosslinker in it. So something you have to be careful about is that once that the speed of the reaction is often set by the initiator. And so if you start with part A and it turns out that's the side with the initiator, you're getting 5 minutes out of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that has tricked me before. And that's actually that's historically that's part of the reason why Pleasure Forge starts with part B. I know it's much more common to start with part A, but we actually start with part B.
Interesting.
So I think you mentioned your employees finding or having your inter-shop directions, and we talked earlier about shop safety. And I know something that a lot of people kind of miss out on is keeping copies of your SDS sheets. Well, more commonly known as your MSDS, but it's now called your SDS sheet.
Yeah.
So you really should be, I mean, I shouldn't say should, legally, in most places, you are required to have copies of the SDS for all of your materials available to your employees, particularly if you're a corporation. Mm-hmm. I don't think incorporated is as common within our industry, but still you need to have that. So just a little tidbit there.
Yeah. I mean, if you have an LLC, you're a corporation.
Fair.
But yeah, actually the way that I do it and is that I have a wiki that is on my web server. It's a private part of the web server and nobody knows how to get to it except for me. But all of my SDS documents are in my wiki. And so if there was something that happened and, you know, firefighters are outside and they're trying to figure out what's inside and things are blowing up, I can go, here's exactly what's in here. And they can adjust as they need to.
Yep. Yep.
Let's see. Super Awesome C had a comment. I find that models with elaborate bases or things closer to the horizontal overhangs actually work better as matrix molds because I can add slojo or pour parts of the mold at an angle. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can tilt that mold or that mold shell. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And a trick that I really love, if you get a copy of Chitubox, so Chitubox is just like, you know, your freeware. I think it's still free. I hope it's still free. I'm not just sending everybody to go spend money on something. But if you get a copy of Chitubox and you import your model in there and just go ahead and flip over to the add support feature and tell it 70 degrees. So if you have something that is past 70 degrees, it will automatically throw support on it. And I really like to do that because if your model requires support for 70 degrees, you probably want to redesign it anyways because it's going to catch bubbles forever. And there's a lot of cool tricks that you can do to create that sensation of like an overhang without actually having, in fact, it's funny I'm holding this. This is a perfect example. If you look at this tongue, it looks like there's this overhang here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if I turn it this way, you can see there actually is that escape path. And so even though from this side, it has that really nice, cool look to it, if I bring this into Chitubox, Chitubox will not throw any support on this. And so I can go ahead and make it. Mm-hmm. But that's just a really fun and simple way to kind of keep track of what's going on and not end up, you know, 24 hours into the design process with something you can't actually manufacture.
Yeah. So, this week, I got a message from somebody asking me what to do, or if there's any follow-up that I need to do after a casting. And, you know, my response was, you know, wash it. The bottom line is that there's probably a little bit of mold release left on it. Mm-hmm. But it kind of made me think about safety, and not just at the end of the process, but at the beginning of the process as well. You know, what do you think the things that we should be thinking about are as we develop that process for ourselves?
So I've got a great specific example. And it's funny. This just came up today. I think some people were probably talking about it. And then one of my other shop friends was like, well, what do you think about this? You work with UV lights a lot. And so I guess there's been some concern about these about deeper UV lights, like 365. And so we actually photograph with 365 because it gives you a much better picture than 420 or 400 or 405. And I think that's
actually one of the places. And when you say 365, 405, 420, we're talking about wavelength.
Your wavelength. You got it. Right. So, you know, a lot of the safety around black lights, it comes from those like TLO3 style bulbs, the big long, you know, fluorescent bulbs. And if you look at the energy, it's coming out or how the energy is dispersed across the wavelengths. It's like this very broad, fat, you know, there's power all the way up into like 450 nanometers on one of those things. With LEDs, it's a very sharp spike. It's mm-hmm. very centered over like whatever the wavelength is for that LED. And so it can kind of create some concern. You know, a 400 nanometer light, that's probably mostly safe. 365, is that going to burn my eyeballs out? And the answer is yes, very, very slowly. And so for your average person, you know, you're not going to hurt yourself. If you have a flashlight and you stare into it for a minute and a half, it's going to give you a bad headache.
Yeah,
it's not going to be fun, but it's not really going to hurt you. Now, if you are a shop and you are taking blacklight photos for hours a day, mm-hmm. you're going to probably notice that you get some, well, the most common side effects is going to be headaches from eye strain. But in the long run, years later, 20 years later, you're going to have macular degeneration. You're going to have cataracts. There's all kinds of issues that come with a lot of exposure to UV. So while it might not, I should say might not, it is not dangerous to have somebody shine a black light at your eyeballs for a couple of minutes. What is dangerous is to be working in this environment all the time. And for collectors as well, if you have a beautiful collection and you have black lights up everywhere, that's maybe not a room you should sleep in. You know, maybe you shouldn't like turn on 50 black lights and then sit there and watch a movie for like 2 hours a night every night, because you're going to be, you know, 60 years old walking around totally blind and be like, oh, how'd you get them cataracts? Dildos. It was totally dildos. Like, that's, I mean, at least it'll be a good story, but it's not great for you.
Yeah, I think one of the points that you kind of made, but I'm going to make it a little bit clearer, is sustained exposure.
Yes.
And there are very few things, you correct me if I'm wrong, but there are very few things in our industry that are acutely dangerous. And by acute, I'm talking
almost
about
none.
Very short exposures. But when we start talking about longer exposures and more sustained exposures over
half of everything
months,
in your workshop is bad for you.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So occupational exposure is absolutely not the same thing as, you know, we call it incidental exposure.
Okay.
Incidental exposure is, you know, you're playing with some clay and you puff some mica in the air, or like, you know, you're doing your makeup and you breathe in a little bit of mica. It's not the end of the world. But if you sit out here every single day and you're mixing powdered micas, and I think you talked about this, one of the great things you can do with mica is to, you know, pre-mix it with your silicone, do something to get it out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely dangerous. In fact, I am probably the poster child for bad kids who did bad things and then paid the cost. Resin. The first time that you get exposed, it's a sensitizer. The first time you're exposed to resin, it doesn't do anything to you. You're like, what's the big deal? The second time you're like, well, it's the same, right? So it's like the 12th time you're like, hey, this kind of itches a little bit. And then you end up being like me, where it's like the 500th time you get resin on yourself. And I think I was saying earlier when we were talking that it felt like, I mean, it was weeks that it felt like I had put my hand into an ant pile of just burning. And now, because I've been sensitized, it's actually more difficult for me to do my work, because every time I'm even around resin, I have to fight with the fact that my body's been sensitized. Mica powder, it's super, super safe. I mean, it's got like the risk profile of a glass of water. But if you breathe mica, and there's actually, as funny as it is, there's a term I've heard going around, unicorn rainbow lung.
Yeah.
It's like the really cute version of like coal miner's lung. It's terrible for you. You start coughing and like you can't, because there are these flat platelets, you know, they're not, mica is not these little pellets that it's easy for the cilia to bring up. I mean, it's not the needle shapes that are really bad, but it's still, it's these flat platelets. They get in there. It's hard for your body to bring them up. You're breathing it all the time. You get this terrible cough, and then you're at the doctor's like, why am I coughing? And it's coming up all pink and blue and iridescent. But it's a serious issue. It's a serious thing. Mold release. Mold release is not dangerous to a customer.
Right.
Breathing mold release all day long.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll hazard a guess that anybody, if they go into their shop right now, go to the very tip top of some shelf you haven't touched in 6 months and take a paper towel and wipe it across the top of that shelf. And I guarantee you that the paper towel is going to be just oily and gross. And that same buildup that happened on the top of that shelf, that was from the passive airflow.
Yeah.
Inside your body is this whole system of forced turbulence that exists expressly for the purpose of filtering and pulling contaminants out of the air. So I guarantee you that the amount that you've put into your body is significantly worse than that paper towel.
Yeah. I actually, funny thing is, I just spent the last 2 days casting resin. I went through, I guess it was about a gallon kit of Smooth On Onyx Fast, which is actually, that one throws off a lot of fumes. It gets really hot really fast. It has a, you know, about a 2-minute pot life, I think. And then it like cures in like 15 minutes. But, you know, I spent this weekend casting resin and I've had no problems. Now, my employees, on the other hand, I've got one who has become sensitized to it and
they just
can't.
Are these urethane resins or epoxy resins?
I wish I could answer that. Honestly, I can't say for sure. Okay. My brain's just not braining right now. But it's the Onyx Fast and it's the Smooth On 325. Those were the two I was using this weekend. And I think
those are urethane based resins, which would make sense with sensitization.
Mm-hmm. One of my employees doesn't have a problem. But you know, I've been doing it for 5 years now and it doesn't bother me at all. What I don't quite understand is the difference in sensitization and difference in our reactions to that. And I don't know if I'm just ignoring it or if my employees are just more sensitive than I am.
I don't know. I recently finished a series of classes that went through some of very, very lightly touched on some of the issues with things like how our endocrine system works and how our immune system works. And it's kind of amazing. Like our whole body is just this terrible duct taped together, insane thing that's trying to shake itself loose at all times. And,
but also survive forever.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's crazy. It's amazing. But I mean, you know, one of the, just to kind of highlight how different people can be. I mean, one of the very common endocrine issues that people have is that you accidentally, one of the intermediary signalers in your endocrine system accidentally looks like part of your immune system and causes your immune system to actually signal you to continue to make more and more of this hormone. It's kind of the, it's not Hashimoto's disease. I don't think it's like kind of like the opposite end of that. It's been a month since I was in that class now, but you know, just one little change, and you have somebody's immune system making a chemical that looks like the signal that says, "Hey, you know what I really need is to activate my HPT axis, and just my hypothalamus would be, it'd be great if it was just going nuts all the time." All the time. So I'm not at all surprised that you might have one person who is around resins like, oh, this is no big deal. And then somebody else who is like half dead every time they smell it. I mean, I particularly with epoxy resins don't bother me. But every time I come in, because we have a separate area for casting that kind of resin. Every time I come in from the wet shed, the epoxy resin, whatever shed. Both Star and Kristen are like, "Oh, you smell like resin. I can smell it on you." I'm like, "I don't smell anything. I'm fine."
Yeah.
So,
and not everybody can do what I have done. And I'll add kind of some details here, because when I had my studio built out, I built in ventilation specifically for resin casting. So, you know, I've got a 8-inch inline fan that's pulling 600 CFM through a vent hood. And so I'm doing all my work right in front of this vent hood, which is pulling all of that away from me. So I think that if people can take some of these ideas and at least work with them in whatever capacity they can, even if it's just putting, you know, a fan in a window next to them.
So absolutely.
That, you know, it's pulling the air across instead of back at them. It's, I'm hoping that folks can actually, you know, take some of these ideas and run with them as much as possible.
Well, one of the best things that has happened, and people have not started to take advantage of this yet. But one of the best things that has happened to our industry is legalized marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Go look at so BVV, Best Value Vax. They are a great supplier for vacuum equipment. Mm-hmm. You can get all kinds of awesome things for adult novelty, and they exist because of legalize marijuana, because the other people in the world who need vacuum chambers and pressure pots and all this equipment are making, they're extracting resins and terpenes. You talk about having a venting system. I mean, go on Amazon. Don't look for a dildo flow. You're never going to find it.
Yeah.
Go look for marijuana grow equipment. There's all kinds of solutions for how do I get this terrible smell out of my house and neutralize it on the way out the door. And they're cheap. I mean, you know, there might be 300 shops for us now, but that's nothing compared to how many people are growing marijuana and are using similar equipment to us.
Yeah. Best Value Vax, that's actually who I got my vacuum chamber from. I put it in the chat. There's a company called Tjernland, and I guess it's Swedish or something because there's a J in the middle of it. Tjernland, Tjernland inline fans. That's who I use. And their 6-inch duct fan pulls like 500 CFM.
That's pretty good.
Which will turn over a room in, you know, about 2 to 3 minutes. So their 8-inch pulls like 800 CFM. But and CFM is cubic feet per minute, by the way.
Yeah, and just be aware of what you're putting in front of that kind of fan. I'm sure you are, but for people who might not be, there are what's called explosion-proof fans. And the big difference, most explosion-proof fans tend to be like inverter-based fans instead of you know, DC with a brush. And so they don't create any sparks. And that's important. Like for me, for example, I use a lot of ethanol in my cleaning process. And, you know, you hit the LEL, the lower explosion limit, and you put that out a regular fan, and your shed becomes a fuel air bomb. It is terrible. It is not, I mean, obviously this hasn't happened to me. I still have a face despite the fact that I don't put it on the internet. But it's very scary and it can happen very, very fast. So if you are using, if you are using alcohols or anything else, if you're airbrushing, with non-water-based, so I use a lot of 2K-based paints, and that's kind of becoming more popular. I have mixed feelings on 2K paints becoming popular because they are so incredibly dangerous, partially because they explode, but also because the isocyanates in them are very, very bad for you. But speaking of resin, I'll tell you a trick that I really like, and I did it on this one here. Once you finish a resin master, one of the problems is that master is going to stink up your workshop forever. You can seal the outside of it, but you know, what do you do on the inside? So a trick that I really like is you go get some really cheap encapsulating epoxy off of Amazon. It doesn't have to be the good stuff. The whole purpose of it is to just seal everything up and just roll it around on the inside. I actually use part of the reason why this is so dark black is because I take the epoxy and I add a black pigment, and that lets me see as I roll it around. And then once that has cured, you end up with a master that has no smell. Everything's been locked in. And so I can feel confident sending this to somebody that if they are sensitive to resins, sensitive to urethanes, that they're not going to be exposed to that.
Yeah. That's actually a really good idea. I hadn't considered the inside, because I know you've got to vent it. In the 3D printing process, you need to have vent holes that allow you to basically not create a suction to the point where your object is going to tear your FE.
Yeah. Well, I mean, incompressible flow. People don't think about that. They say, if I'm going to print this, all they're ever thinking about is how thick is this wall? And it's like, oh, well, I'll just make this wall thinner, and I'll make the wall thinner, and that will reduce the forces. Fluids are incompressible. It doesn't matter how thick your wall is. It matters how big is the total surface area. So, you know, one of the things I see happen a lot with people that are newer to it is they try to print direct to build plate for the first time, and they start getting these crazy layer separations. And it's actually caused by hydrostatic force. And they don't see it when they print with supports. And so there's this kind of common knowledge that's not really correct going around that, oh, you need to print with supports. And that the layer separation is somehow related to that. And while it is related to that, what the supports are doing is they're acting like springs. They're kind of squishy. So they're allowing it to get kind of squished every time it comes down. And you should be eliminating the problem, not hiding the problem. You should be venting it, like you're saying, or you should increase your light off delay.
Yeah. Somebody's asking, seal it with what again? What did you seal the inside of that with?
So it depends on like what level of performance you're going for. There are some urethane-based sealants that are going to do a better job of bonding to the urethane-based printing resin. I don't use those as much because, you know, I'm trying to get rid of the urethane as much as possible. So I actually, I'm just using a cheap encapsulating epoxy, pretty much any kind. Look for something with a really long cure time, like a 24-hour cure time. There's a bunch of different versions. You can get the stuff for like making dice, not really what you want. That tends to be pretty fast. Bar top epoxy you can use. It's cheap.
Yeah.
It's a little stinky at first, but once you fully cure it, the smell goes away.
Okay. So a couple of random questions for you. What's on your studio playlist?
Oh, me. Okay. I thought we were talking about your cool startup music. So dwarf power metal.
Dwarf power metal?
Yeah. Yeah. I listen to Windrose a lot. A lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is where Google is going to be my savior.
Oh, it's so good. I'm actually kind of upset that there's really only one. There's like five or six bands that are making like elf power metal. There's like one band making dwarf power metal. And I think this is unfair. I mean, they've got great hits like Diggy Diggy Hole. And I'm not even joking. I mean, it
yeah, it I'm kicks. Looking right now. It's
amazing.
Oh man, I wish I could play it because, well, I can't because copyright and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Diggy Diggy Hole, Drunk Dwarf Inn.
We Were Warriors. If you listen to We Are Warriors and you're not ready to like take apart an entire Mono X and put it back together again, like with anger, this song just does not work for you. You probably need the elf metal instead.
Oh man, I'm looking at some of the pictures of the concerts, and
oh, they do it in cosplay too. I mean, they look the part.
Yeah,
oh, it's amazing.
These big hammers and axes, yeah. Oh my god,
oh, it's so
that
good.
Was not the answer I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of like bad goth club music. I mean, you know.
Okay, so The Cure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
My dancing is a little funny.
I grew up in. I mean, my club days were the 90s, so. We're going back to, you know, those kinds of, you know, the Cure, Nine Inch Nails, things like that.
Oh yeah,
that's where my music goes back to. But dwarf power metal was not something I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other stuff. I have my guilty pleasures. I love a lot of terrible pop,
mm-hmm.
for sure. But yeah, right now it's dwarf power metal.
I have a Spice Girls station on my Pandora.
Oh no, it's already it is stuck in my head now. It is now playing in my head.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Oh no, oh no.
You're gonna have to listen to it just to get it out of your head.
Oh, we gotta move on before it haunts me.
Well, in a similar vein, tell me about your most epic fail.
Oh, man. That's just such a big pile to dig through.
I mean, we all have our part A, part A, part B, part B stories.
Oh, no. See, the problem is, like you say, like most epic fail, and like my brain's like, oh, is it like the Flaming Ramp of Doom story? Like, do we bring that one up? Or... I mean, I a lot of my worst failures go far outside of just being here. It's probably probably filling up a whole bunch of molds with like part A plus part A.
Yeah.
Is one of them. I'm pretty good at recovering molds now. You can recover a mold from that.
Okay. Tell me. I mean, I've done it as far as like, I use isopropyl alcohol, but they're never the same afterward.
Well, isopropyl alcohol is not a great solvent for what you're trying to do. If you want to go the expensive route, you use Novox. So you start out with your IPA and then you do a quick wash with Novox. Just you know, a half cup, swish it, pour it out, and then you cannot use that mold for days. You have to let it off gas again. But that's going right back to that whole what is compatible with silicone. You need a cyclic, you know, a ring solvent.
Okay.
I'm still trying to think of like an epic fail. And I think I'm having a hard time coming up with something off top of my head. I know I just have a lot of little failures every day. That's more of my life is just a string of small failures.
Yeah. I think one of mine was when I was experimenting with deadeners, I got my proportions wrong. And I let's just say the decimal point was one point to the right than it should have been. And this thing came out so floppy. I mean, it would not stand on its own. I mean, it was more along the lines of, do you remember those slappy hands?
That yes.
It was more like that than anything.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I will say, so did you see, I'm about to say, do you remember that kind of alien inspired toy from last time? It belongs to CLL Lovecrafts. It's like it's got like fingers coming up around it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
Very, very complicated to design a mold for. I mean, without a doubt, that was the most challenging mold build I have ever done. And it was multiple iterations of figuring out, you know, how it's like you had the fingers curl up. And so you can't really get a mold past it. So I had to design almost like a balloon to go inside the mold so you could collapse it to pull it out. There's just all this crazy stuff that went into making it. And then when I finally printed the mold shells, everything was off by like an inch because I had in Blender, I had pulled the bottom of the mold away so I could look in and kind of rotate it around to make sure everything was good to go and then generated all of my files. And so I printed all of these files that were like 1 inch off and I'm trying to put it together. Like it's a perfect example of that whole, like I write all these instructions of like, this is how you should do it. Always double check this, always make sure you do that. And then I throw it out the window and screw myself. Yeah. So that was pretty painful.
We've had multiple requests for some kind of explanation about the flaming ramp of doom.
I shouldn't have brought that up. So,
I mean, you can explain it to the extent that you want to.
No, it's fine. So back when I was, before I was shop dad, when I was, shop baby, shop child, I had built a half pipe and, you know, it had been raining for days. And so I just finished building this awesome half pipe. My friends were over and we were gonna have a great time on this thing. And like it had been raining and like we tried to like get on it and like it was just so slippery that we couldn't have fun on it. So I'm like, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna splash just a little bit of gasoline on it. Not enough to light it on fire for real, just enough to dry it out. Uh-huh. And yeah, so unfortunately, I was within range of my dad actually saw this happen. And hang on, let me back up 1 second, because the first bad idea was just let's go skate on this like questionably built half pipe while it's wet. And then it's like, well, let's light it on fire to dry it out. And then it's like, hey, it's probably dry enough, but it's still on fire. How cool would it be if we were skating on a flaming half pipe? So my dad saw that, and you know that whole thing like where like a car hits like a kid and like the mom like rages out and is able to like flip the car upside down.
Yeah.
And so like this mild mannered, you know, 50 something year old guy who's like never raised his voice to me in like my entire life, like just appears, like teleports to the side of the ramp and flipped it upside down, like managed to get air and flip this thing upside down. It was not good. So that's the basic overview. I was in trouble for a very long time.
Okay.
A very long time.
Oh, man. James Parler on YouTube. I'm not quite sure that I understand the comment or question. I'm new to the toy scene, and I was making a wearable, and I used the wrong insert. Demolding it, I ripped the tip off because it was it had too thin of walls.
Yeah, that's very challenging. I struggle with that quite a bit with was there any more to that question before I start trying to answer? Was there anything else to it?
I don't think so.
So I know I'm answering the right part. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, we have one coming out here. We've actually released it previously, but the full release is pretty soon, called the Planty. And it's got like a little internal opening, and it's very hard. How do you get that center to stay aligned and not kind of float to one side or the other? I have a trick that I like. I'm not sure it's really applicable to everything that everybody does, but I'll actually show you because it's right here. So, I mean, here's one of the issues, right? How do you keep this centered? I've got to create this with a hole going all the way through it, but I've got this dumb floppy inside piece.
Yep.
So if you look.
And it's also S-curved.
It's also S-curved, yeah. So can you see that right in here, this is actually a divot?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a boat. That is buoyant. So think about that. Yeah.
Okay.
So
for folks at home, basically you've created this cavity that is like a boat that floats on the silicone. And so by doing that, it naturally wants to pull up, which is going to not straighten it out, but at least put enough tension on it so that it doesn't move to one side or
yes,
the other.
It's going to counteract that sinking. So this is an issue that we run into, is that our mold silicone is much more dense than our toy silicone. And so this is going to try to sink to one side or the other. So instead, you just carve out a little, and you can actually do this by hand. Just take a knife. I 3D print this in, but you can actually just carve out a little boat shape, and all that's going to do is kind of lightly, very gently pull it up and center it.
Yep.
And that's a little trick that I love. It's not applicable to everything. It's not necessarily applicable to wearables. Wearables are super tough. If you want the specialist in that department, I think you have to get our brother shop from another mother, the Wandering Bard.
Okay.
They do some pretty dang good wearables.
Wandering Bard, are they based out of Germany? Who am I thinking of that's based out of Germany? But
Quimera Forge? They were out of Germany. Now they're here in Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Okay. I'm going to definitely put Wandering Bard on my list of folks to get in touch with. So, is there anything else that you wanted to bring up?
Let's see. Coat the inside of your toys or your inside of your masters. That helps. Take your time with anything you make. Do as I say, not as I do. Definitely follow your instructions. Unlike me, you should definitely not be 6 years into this and still like wrecking whole series. That doesn't normally happen. Like I'm kidding around. I don't normally wreck whole series of things, but it does still happen to me. Don't be discouraged by failure. It happens to all of us, as you've been hearing from me like all night. You know, if you want to recycle, if you want to like reduce your waste, a big part of that is reaching out to us to get help. Talk to your friends, make friends, ask them how they did it before you slam through a gallon of silicone trying to figure out how to mold build. You know, send a message. You know, there's all of those wonderful videos that you've made. There's the wiki now that you can go. If that's more your speed, you can go check out. There's lots of places now to get this information and, you know, save some time, save some material. I think that's about it, though, for now. I mean, if you want to do a third time, I'll come back a third time. I think we can cover some more ground.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're going to have to. It looks like the wiki is down right now.
It is. I have no idea why.
Okay. Well, George will make sure that that gets into the chat. It's in the show notes and the video description, so folks can hit that up when it goes back on.
Yeah, we'll have it back up on Monday. It's just it's the weekend, and yeah, I probably just forgot to pay the light bill for it. And
yeah,
I to be honest, I've not been hugely involved this last couple of weeks. I've had several wonderful editors who have just been tearing through it and adding things and fixing things. The line art page, I wish I could do a shout out for this person. They're kind of shy, and so they don't want me to. But the line art page is one particular person that has just kicked butt and been taking names. So I haven't been as actively involved. So it's kind of surprising for me. Who knows what happened behind the scenes that caused it to go down? It might have been just somebody trying to do a little update and hitting the wrong button.
Right. How do you get, or if anybody wanted to be an editor for that, how do they get that status?
Yeah. So, you know, being an actual editor costs money. It doesn't cost you money. It does cost me money. Okay. I have no problem with footing that bill at all whatsoever. So I'd say the first thing is you just want to make sure that you actually mean it. You do have some spare time. There's nothing wrong. If you just want to write up a page and email it to us, you can send it to admin@onlygoblins.com and we'll add it in. If you actually want to get in there and edit and help out, that would be hugely appreciated. I can think of a dozen topics that badly need somebody besides me to write about them. I mean, hand sculpting. I can't hand sculpt worth a dang. You know, here in the next couple of months, we should be adding some like cool stuff for editors. You know, one of the first things is going to be the traveling tabaxi. I mean, you can have this mold in your shop and you can play with it and be one of the people that gets to, you know, see it firsthand. But first dibs is going to go to the people that gave back to the community by writing articles, by making videos like you do.
And when you say traveling, is that going to be are you sending the mold around or the master around?
Yeah. No, it's actually going to be, so I've got a really neat, like wooden treasure chest that it'll come with molds in it and some instructions. And so that'll go from shop to shop to shop. So, you know, with say the wandering bards who brought them up, they actually have their own tabaxi model. I'd love for them to join in. So I'll send them, you know, two molds, the box, the instructions. They'll keep it for 2 weeks. They're welcome to, you know, make stuff off of it, sell whatever they want off of it. And then when they're done with it, they'll ship it off to the next person. And so hopefully it'll make quite the trip.
Yeah. I'm really curious. I've thought about this in a roundabout way of I'm really curious of what each of us would do with the same concept. And this is kind of in that vein, but you know, I have a very particular pour style and, you know, Fantasy Grove has a very different pour style and, Pleasure Forge and Paladin Pleasures, they all have very particular pour styles. So I'd love to see something that we could each, you know, side by side go, okay, this came from Amaviti, this came from Fantasy Grove, this came from Paladin Pleasures. And it's all the same model, but different castings.
It's funny how these ideas, you know, you tend to have this kind of like genesis of a new idea, and it can come from multiple places at the same time, because we're talking about this right now, but I know, you said Fantasy Grove. I know Tiberius has talked some about mold swaps, and I know, Allison at Something Squishy has talked about doing mold swaps. And, I don't remember if it was, their name for, escapes me. And I hate that, but there's one of our wonderful community members that's been trying to put together, like a teeny swap.
Okay.
So it's kind of funny that like, there's just, everybody's kind of thinking along the same lines of like, hey, what would it look like if you cast in my stuff?
Yeah.
I know Strange Bedfellows has done celebrity casts other places multiple times.
Okay. Yeah. Ah, that's something we're going to have to work on. All right. Well, I have taken up so much of your time this evening, and you have been so awesome. I appreciate you jumping in at the last minute, and I'm going to have you on again because there's just so many different things that I want to get to that we just can't in, you know, the 90 minutes that we've got here.
Oh, well, we need to get, you know, the Elegoo Jupiter is the new printer that everybody's excited about. So we need to get one of those and have a whole teardown session.
Interesting. Why is that one jumping up to the foreground?
That is a, that's an hour conversation in of itself. The Mono X is a wonderful machine, but it has some very serious drawbacks. A lot of people got it all at the same time, and they all experienced the same drawbacks. So there's been kind of a rush to Elegoo.
Okay.
I think it'll be interesting to see how those machines are performing in a year. Are they having, you know, similar problems? I don't know. But the Jupiter is the issue with the Saturn is that the Saturn doesn't really hit the size that we need for a full SKU range. The Jupiter does. The Jupiter, I think it hits 11 inches, okay. 300 and something millimeters. I mean, it actually can hit like an XL. So that's, and the price point's $1,300. So it's actually affordable. It's a company that has a good support structure. So, I mean, keep an eye out there. I'll bet you'll start to see a whole bunch of those show up all at one time, followed by a bunch of people who are like, oh my God, my printer's on fire. And it would be great to be able to, you know, help out there.
Yeah.
So far, the only people that I've seen buy them are the people who are very good and already know what they're doing. But
yeah, we'll 1300 is, yeah, 1300 is affordable-ish. You know, it's kind of up there in terms of what most people are willing to spend for a 3D printer. And I hate to see people spend, you know, $200 to $300 on a Creality when they could be buying something else that is probably not going to give them as much heartache.
Well, and you can't buy one. You got to buy two. I will swear by this. You have to buy two printers. You need to be able to hot swap parts. It'll save your life.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do at $1,300.
Yeah. Well, Shop Dad, I absolutely appreciate your time. Hang out for a minute and we'll talk once we end the live stream here in just a minute. But again, I want to say thank you. And I appreciate all your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got James Parler says he's got 4 AnyCubics.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Bobby White just bought a CR6 Max.
Okay. Oh, beautiful machine.
Yeah.
Beautiful machine. I mean, that the Corba, I think it's the Corba Max, is also pretty epic.
Super awesome C AnyCubic Viper forever. I have an AnyCubic Viper. I'm happy with it.
I think Alex at Fantasy Grove would probably agree with you.
Yeah. I also have a
machine.
Prusa. So, you know, I've got a few of them, but yeah. All right. With that, I am going to wrap it up. Matt, say goodbye and, I will let everybody know what's coming up in the future.
Yep. Thank you all for having me.
Bye. All right. So with that, let me see if I can get to the right screen here. Where is it? I think that one's it. Okay. So that was Matt with Shop Dad with onlygoblins.com. And he has so much knowledge in that head that one of these days we're going to get some portion of it out of there that we can continue to use into the future. So next week on August 14th, we have Dong Sommelier. On 21st, we have Ishtar 137. Those two are both collectors. It's going to be a little bit different conversation because at that point, we're going to be talking about, you know, the other side of the screen or the other side of the conversation, what it's like to be on the consumer side. But if you have ever seen any of their collections, they are kind of incredible. August 28th, we have Pleasure Forge, and then we have a couple of designers who are going to join us. We've got Bat is going to be on September 4th, Venus is on September 11th. And yeah, basically I've got people booked out into October. So it's a kind of a full schedule. Well, with that, I am done. I am out of here, and we'll do this again sometime. Actually, we'll do it next Sunday. Good night, everybody.